अश्चितं प्राक्षितं अश्रितं पति भक्तियोगेन तीव्रेण वैराग्या च नयेद्विषं वशम्. It is the duty of every conditioned soul to engage his polluted consciousness, which is now attached to material enjoyment, in very serious devotional service with detachment. Thus his mind and consciousness will be under full control.
Sri Chaitanya Manum Bistam Shavadam Yenam Bhutale Swayam Rupa Gita Mayam Dudati Swam Vedantikam.
So, in this verse, Kapila Muni, Kapila Dev is stressing that it is the duty of every conditioned soul to engage his polluted consciousness, which is now attached to material enjoyment, in very serious devotional service with detachment. Thus his mind and consciousness will be under full control. So we can understand here, as is also explained in the Bhagavad Gita, that the living entity is actually conditioned in the material world due to the false ego of the mind, due to the mind which desires to lord it over material nature. The mind is actually the central point of yoga practice. It doesn't take a very great amount of intelligence to understand that this mind is very, very powerful. The mind is a very, very powerful thing. And due to the contamination or the pollution of the mind, due to the mind's being polluted by influence of material consciousness, therefore the living entity is actually helplessly forced into various types of activities. It is not that the living entity chooses to do anything. It appears that actually throughout the day and throughout our entire life, it appears that we actually were doing so many things. We can understand that whenever we do something, there is some contemplation. There is some activity of the consciousness, the intelligence, the mind. But actually, the living entity is helplessly forced. Arjuna says to Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita also that, how is it, Lord Krishna, that sometimes, even unwillingly, he says, how is it sometimes that even unwillingly we are forced into abominable activities? We can see, even in the modern society, there are so many instances of people committing the most abominable activities and later on repenting, regretting that they did such abominable things. And we see sometimes also in the court that someone commits a very abominable activity and he pleads insanity. This is a very regular affair now, especially in the modern courthouses, that people can be completely freed on the grounds of insanity. But actually, what is insanity? Just like one time Srila Prabhupada gave an example that in India there was a very big court case, and one man, he was accused of murder or some thing of that nature. So he pleaded insanity, and the judge asked the doctor to examine him to see whether he's actually insane or not, the psychiatrist. So the psychiatrist came before the judge, and the judge said, "So, did you come to any conclusion about his sanity?" And the psychiatrist said, "Actually, Your Honor, if I was to decide that he is insane, or whether he's not insane, actually," he says, "99% of the people that I study, I would consider insane." So it is a question of whether we want to decide this man is more insane than the rest. And actually, this is a fact that in the material world, everyone is completely insane. It's not that we have to have a big deal of intelligence. It doesn't require any big analytical computer or great tests. The fact is, if we have an ounce of intelligence, we can see that 99.9% of the population are totally mad. And there is no need to have any doubt. Because according to Shastra, one who identifies with this material body as the self, he is an insane man. So, therefore, we can understand that everybody, even ourselves, we are insane. It is not that they're insane and we're actually, we're completely above it all and intellectually completely sane and we are very intelligent. No, actually we are also insane. That is why Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when he was asked by Prakasananda Saraswati, "Why you continuously chant this mantra, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, and you do not study Vedanta, you do not engage in big philosophical debates, you are just simply running here and there like a madman, chanting the name of Krishna. This is not the activity of sannyasi. Sannyasi is supposed to be very learned, very philosophically inclined." But Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, "My dear Prakasananda Saraswati, I beg your pardon, but when I asked my Guru Maharaj, I asked him, what is my position? What should I do? Because this is the duty of the disciple. He should approach the Guru in a very humble state of mind. Tarviri paripatena paripashnena sevaya upatekshantite jnanam janinat tapadarshana. That one should approach the Guru in a very humble state of mind and inquire submissively from him, render service unto him. So Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, when I approach my Guru Maharaj and explain to him, I asked him, not explain, but I asked him, what is my position? He said, you are the greatest fool. And this is the actual condition that we're in. We are the greatest fools. Because everyone in Kali Yuga is born lower than the Sudra. It is not just something in the Shastras that this statement is there. Oh yes, that's everybody else, but not me. No, actually everyone is born lower than the Sudra because we do not have any understanding that we are not this body. That is the first principle of spiritual life. That is the first principle, the basic principle of spiritual life is that I am not this body. The first principle is not that I am a very elevated soul, but one is that I am not this body. This is the first business of the living entity in the human form of life. Then when he comes to that platform of understanding I'm not the body, that is the beginning of human life. Then from there, from that beginning, then there is gradual elevation in spiritual life, gradually. But we see that the modern society, not only is there no understanding that they are not that body, but there is 100% endeavor to bring about bodily consciousness in the whole society. And therefore everybody is on the royal road to hell. Because the mind is, according to the Bhagavad Gita, the mind is the greatest friend or the greatest enemy of the living entity. Mind has two businesses. One, it can be your greatest friend. Mind can actually be a very wonderful, intimate friend, which can reveal to one the most confidential inner pastimes of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Or on the other hand, mind can be the greatest enemy, which can drag one away from Krishna down to the lowest conditions of hellish life. Just like one time Srila Prabhupada was asked, how is it that even some big sannyasis in ISKCON, they become victim, even sometimes of the most ridiculous situations. He was asked particularly about one sannyasi who fell down with a very old woman. So, Srila Prabhupada, he said it is only a question of saying, I like it. I like it. It is not anything more. As soon as you say, I like it, you're finished. Even though one may be on the highest platform of endeavoring for spiritual perfection, one moment, I like it. Finished. Ruined. This is how powerful the mind is. Just like we see, the example is given, Visvamrita Muni. He meditated for 60,000 years. We cannot meditate for 6,000 microns of seconds, for 6 seconds. He meditated for 60,000 years on the banks of the Ganga. Supreme meditation. But one time only, he heard the tinkle of the footbells of the society girl, Manaka. Finished. His entire meditations were finished. And he became agitated by sex life. He opened his eyes and there was a beautiful society girl, Manaka. So he became victim. So Srila Prabhupada says that at any moment one can become deviated by this mind. One should not make friends with the mind. In the beginning of devotional service, one has to be very strict. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Prabhupada used to say, in the morning, you beat the mind with a shoe. As soon as you get up, you start beating. First thing, slap, slap. And then the mind, no, I want to go back to sleep. Slap, slap. No, I want to forget about Krishna. But then, throughout the day, one has to constantly beat the mind. And then in the evening, one has to beat it again with a broomstick. So this beating must go on because the mind is so fickle, and due to previous associations in our lifetime alone, we can look back, not for very long, but just a quick glance, we can see the capabilities, the powers of the mind. When the mind becomes overcome by the false ego, we can see how much abominable activity is there. And now we can see that by engaging the mind in devotional service, how much glorious happiness is there. It is a completely different world. There's no connection. It's a completely different world altogether. The world of our past activities and the world of Krishna consciousness is a completely different dimension. There's no similarities at all. And we see, Srila Prabhupada says, a devotee when he goes out in the street, he is completely aloof from everything. And he sees these people, they're running here and there, trying to satisfy their sensual desires, being frustrated at every moment. Even you see when you go on the airplane, people, they are so frustrated It's supposed to be such a luxury to fly, but actually it's a complete frustration from beginning to end. People are so frustrated, frustrated in their family life, frustrated in society, frustrated as countries, nationalism, wars, fighting. So much frustration is there. But for the devotee, there's no frustration because his mind is always absorbed in Krishna. It is not a sentimental realization that we go out in the street and we're always going, oh yes, Krishna, Krishna, oh, 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 oh. That the commies, they think that we go around all day long trying to brainwash. They think we're some sort of zombies who go around the whole day frightened and completely in complete anxiety. No. Actually, the thing is with the devotee, it's not his own endeavors which make him capable of overcoming material energy. Why don't you not think that? You are not capable. You may think, oh yes, I'm big, strong. Devotee, I can do anything, I'm so powerful. No, actually this is also false. But Krishna says, Bhuktaram yagna tapasyam sarvaloka mehisaram suridam sarvabhutanam gyanfamam shanti richati. He says, anyone who understands me to be the supreme proprietor, to be the supreme lord, the supreme enjoyer, and to be the supreme friend. These three things Srila Prabhupada is emphasizing in this purport and in the last purport. That anyone who comes to this realization, Krishna is the supreme proprietor, the supreme enjoyer, and the supreme friend. Gyanfamam shanti richati. For him there is complete peace, complete tranquility, complete freedom from the agitation of the mind and the senses. So this platform of devotional service is not very easy. It is not that one will achieve it overnight. Of course, if one is very sincere, maybe. But by constant endeavor, just like Arjuna says to Krishna, that it seems very difficult to conquer over the mind, to control the mind. More difficult than controlling the wind. But Krishna says, it is possible by regulating the senses. First of all, one must regulate the senses. And by constant endeavor and practice. There must be constant endeavor. One should not feel, well, I've followed the regulated principle so long, it's about time I took a break. You know, I've been doing this for years. One may think like that, but actually this is not, it is not some cheap thing. This is sahajism. One may be sahaji and think, oh, I've done it, I've been doing this for so long, you know. I should take a change for a while. No. Actually, this constant endeavor is the price for obtaining Krishna. That is the real, test. The real test is how much one is constantly. And that's why here it says, Tivrena. Tivrena Bhakti Yogena. That means by very seriously practicing Krishna consciousness. By very seriously endeavoring. To achieve Krishna under any conditions. We should understand these conditions of material life, they're not something accidental or some phenomena that just happened by some cosmic bang. This is not the fact. Actually, this whole material gigantic energy, it is going on by the direct control of the Supreme Personality of God, Lord Krishna. Therefore, Srila Prabhupada says, not even one blade of grass moves without the sanction of the Supreme Lord. Understand that point, that not even one blade of grass moves. What to speak of the sun, the moon, the stars, the earth, planet, and everything in it. Everything is going on by Krishna's direction. So, material energy is a sort of test. It is a test that how sincere we are. What do we want? Krishna or Maya? And according to our sincerity, that test becomes as difficult as we want it to be. If we're not sincere, then material energy becomes very powerful. Krishna says, Devihi esu gunamayi mama maya dharatiya mama eviye prapajante maya mitam tarantite. This divine energy of mind, consisting of the three modes, goodness, passion and ignorance, is very, very powerful. and it's very difficult to overcome. But one can easy, one who surrenders unto me can easily cross beyond it. So this is the thing, that material energy is working very wonderfully, like a dream, just like a expert magician. Srila Prabhupada uses that example, that Krishna is like the expert magician. He can either cast a spell and put us into a complete dream world, or he can just as easy elevate us to this transcendental platform of self-realization, of Krishna consciousness. It is not very difficult for him. It is very difficult for us. If you want to elevate yourself to this platform of full realization, that is very difficult. Even if you want to get into Maya, it's very difficult. You may say, well, it's not so difficult. Actually, it's very difficult also to become expert in enjoying Maya. Even the Kamis, they are struggling 24 hours a day to be in Maya. Even they're having a great struggle. They think, well, enjoyment is there. No, it's not there. You want to be in Maya, that's also equally a struggle. You want to be Krishna conscious, that's equally a struggle. Struggle is there. Because Krishna says that the Mamaya Vamsa Jivaloke, Jiva Bhuta Sanatana, the living entities are my infinitesimal part and parcels. And they are in me and they are mine. But due to conditional life, they are struggling very hard. Struggling means we are struggling very hard with what? With the indriyas, with the senses. We are struggling very hard with the mind. Because in any condition of life, we have to struggle. Because we are helpless. We are insignificant. We may think, no, but we are insignificant. Whether in the material condition or in the spiritual condition, we are insignificant. And we see so many big, big people, just like General Bhutto, president of Pakistan. No, they hang him. The Shah of Iran. Just like there's a nice cartoon I saw. It's a desert island in the middle of the sea. And Adi Amin is sitting there lamenting. He's just sitting like that. And behind him up crawls the Shah of Iran. And he turns to Adi Amin and he said, "Geez, Adi," he said, "it's a cruel, cruel world." So, even for big, big personalities, they also are finding that the material energy is very cruel. I mean, they are so powerful. You cannot imagine. Shah of Iran had so much influence. Now he is nothing. Idi Amin was such a big demon. Now he is running like anything. So many big people, but they are finished as soon as the arrangement of the Supreme Personality of God dictates. Now, finished. Now you be big. Now you be small. They are just like little bubbles. The ocean, this example is used many times in Shastra. They're just like the big, big waves of the ocean. There's a little bubble. We are like the little bubble. Sometimes we get to be a big bubble. Sometimes a little bubble. We're just bubbles. And at any time we can go, boop, finish. So, to be big materialist, that is also very difficult. So difficulty is there. So why not take this difficulty for Krishna? Difficulty is there, whether one wants to achieve material success or spiritual success. Success means difficulty. But one who takes shelter of Krishna, one who takes shelter of Krishna, he can easily cross beyond this difficulty. Because how is there any difficulty? If I am not the proprietor, if I am not the Lord, the enjoyer, if I am helpless, where's the difficulty? Just like Srila Prabhupada said, sometimes when the child is with the father, the child is not frightened. Even though there may be some instance where the child should be frightened, he's not frightened. Just like Srila Prabhupada said, when I used to travel on a train from Calcutta to Delhi, he said one time the ticket collector came. Of course, if you're a small boy, a big ticket collector asking everyone for tickets. So he approached me and asked me for my ticket. And Srila Prabhupada said, "I was not frightened because my father is there." So he was just using that example that Of course, one may be a little frightened, but if the father is there, you don't care. So the point is that material nature is very frightening. There's so many calamities. What is that verse, danger at every step? Does anyone know that verse in full? No one ever knows it. Padam, padam. Srila Prabhupada says, consciousness acts in three stages under the material conception of life. When we are awake, consciousness acts in a particular way. When we are asleep, it acts in a different way. And when we are in a deep sleep, consciousness acts in still another way. To become Krishna conscious, one has to become transcendental to these three stages of consciousness. Our present consciousness should be freed from all perceptions of life other than consciousness of Krishna. So, this is the point, that actually, in the material world, the consciousness has three conditions, what we call awake, sleeping, and deep sleep. But actually, all are conditions of dreaming, that's all. Whether we are awake, whether we are sleeping, or whether we are in deep sleep, they are all simply conditions of dreaming only. And these dreaming conditions, the living entity is situated in this dream world, and he identifies with so much illusionary presentation. Just like Prabhupada gives the example, at nighttime you dream of tiger. So sometimes, I know myself personally, that sometimes during the night you go, oh, go away, go away. And you wake up, and then you think, oh, phew, boy, I'm glad that's over. I thought for a minute I was going to be eaten by a tiger. So actually it's a fact. When you're dreaming, sometimes you dream. I remember one time when I was young, I dreamt at night that I achieved so much money. I had tons of money. And then I suddenly woke up and I started looking around my bedroom for the money. And when I realized I didn't have that money, I was completely disillusioned. I felt very sad. So actually, this is a fact. In the material world, we dream. The thing is, when we're awake, we think we're awake. There's no awake. All it is it's a more elevated dreaming condition. We go into deep sleep, and we get very intense, just like nowadays it's become very popular to what they call trip out on drugs and psychedelics. This is because they actually realize that, well, everything's just a dream anyway. I might as well just go on a big dream. This is actually their conscience. They say everything's just a big dream. Actually, they can realize that this is just so much dreaming. And actually, they think this is a bad dream. Let me go on a good dream. But dreaming is dreaming. Whether it's good or bad, it's only dreaming. So anyone who has little intelligence can understand, what is the use of so much dreaming? What will it achieve me? What can I achieve by dreaming? Nothing. Because as soon as you wake up, you realize, all nonsense. So similarly, when the living entity wakes up from his dreaming condition of material existence, when he really wakes up, then he sees that there's so much nonsense. He has nothing to do with it. So one should understand how much awake he is by how he is attached to material sense gratification. Doesn't take big brain. How much we are attached to material sense gratification, that is how much we are dreaming. And how much we are attached to the lotus feet of Krishna, that is how much we are awake. So for those of us who are not attached to Krishna, we should understand that we're also dreaming. And the thing is, when you're dreaming, danger is you may fall into a deep dream. Dreaming, all right, you may go in little dream, but you may fall into a big dream. Just like sometimes you say, oh, I'll take 10 minutes nap. And 3 hours later you wake up. And you miss all sorts of appointments and don't get anything done. Because you think, oh, I'll relax with Maya for a few minutes. And she takes a few hours. So you give Maya an inch, she'll take a mile. So we think, oh yes, all right, I'm dreaming a little bit. Sometimes I think of Krishna, sometimes I'm dreaming. But I'll stay in my dreaming condition a little longer because it's quite nice. Thinking of Krishna is nice too, but I like dreaming too. But you may fall into deep sleep. This is the condition. So these three conditions of life are abominable. Whether one's awake, whether one's sleeping, or whether one's in deep sleep, For the devotee, all three conditions are abominable. And only consciousness of Krishna is actually relishable for the devotee. What time it finishes? Oh, it's finished. He may say that I feel very happy by dreaming, but the thing is, we should understand that why he likes to dream. Why is it that, just like commies, they accuse us of the same thing. They say we're escaping. Just like cinema. Cinema is actually very, very popular nowadays. Why? Because people want to actually escape from their mind. So what they think, you see, when the intelligence is there, one can see intelligently how everything is terrible, how material life is horrible, how things are going on so crazy. But when you go to deep sleep, then there's no more intelligence. That's why dreaming, there's no control over the dream. Because intelligence is not involved. So someone who wants to dream, he just wants to negate the intelligence altogether. Get rid of it because it's a botheration. And this is insanity. This is actually insanity. This is why when you go to the mental asylum, someone is saying, I am Napoleon. Attack the British. Attack. Come on, men. Charge. Because there's no more intelligence. Then there's only insanity. Because the difference between sanity and insanity is only the intelligence. So people like very much to sleep, to dream, because they want to get rid of any higher discrimination. Because when they start to discriminate how incredibly horrible the material world is, then they start to go insane also. So therefore they take shelter of intoxication, illusion, sleep. This is given in the mode of ignorance. Thomas, Krishna says, in the mode of ignorance, they take shelter of madness, inertia, sleep, intoxication, some sort of dreaming. They want to just forget everything and just dream. But the thing is that this dreaming condition is complete insanity. Any intelligent man can understand. Sometimes you dream that there's a mountain and it's flying in the sky and it falls on your head and you fall down a well and you pop up, the next minute you're King Henry VIII and you're next minute you're driving a chariot, and then you drive, you know, it's just all complete insanity. Anyone who wants to dream, he's a complete lunatic. That's why luna means the mind. They used to say lunatic because people used to become very mentally disturbed when the full moon. So they used to use this word lunatic because people who are completely mental, who are completely spaced out, as we say. What does spaced out mean? It means on the mental platform, without the intelligence. The difference is without the intelligence. The devotee also has the mental capability. Our mind is acting, but intelligence is there, controlling. The mind says, I want to listen to sex life. No. I want to eat meat. No. I want to go to the pictures. No. I want to go and see my girlfriend. No. This intelligence is the only distinction between animal and human being. Without that intelligence, there's no better than animals. And that's what we have today. We have a bunch of animals. Completely. A bunch of animals. People who are completely lost. And they may say, well, I like to dream. Yes, but the point is, this doesn't solve any problems of life. Birth, old age, disease, and death also. All right, you can dream, but it's not going to solve anything. You know, well, what is it going to solve? Nothing. It's just a complete phantasmagoria, which you can, all right, if you want to take shelter of that sort of thing, okay. But one day you realize, now I have to die. Jai, Bruce Bell.